Lakers Carpool is brought to you by Hook Products USA. Truck lovers, tow hook covers finally are here. Introducing Tokes, a first-of-its-kind tow hook cover that is a great way to personalize your truck's factory tow hooks. Tokes are made in the USA out of high-grade silicone rubber that clasps right over your truck's factory tow hooks so it installs in seconds and no tools are needed. With colors red, white, blue, pink, and amber, and costing just $34.95 per pair, Tokes are a unique and affordable way to customize your truck. Go to hookproductsusa.com and head over to the compatibility tool to make sure that Tokes will fit over your truck's tow hooks. After that, checkout is super easy and your truck will be rocking its Tokes in no time. Again, that's hookproductsusa.com for Tokes, the original tow hook cover. Welcome to Lakers Carpool. My name is James Brooks. I'm your host. Thanks for joining me on today's episode. Things are feeling a little better in Lakerland here. The Lakers went 4-2 on their Grammy trip and, you know, with some pretty incredible wins. You know, my last episode talking about the Lakers' losses, they had just come off two losses to the Hawks and to the Rockets, which were pretty disheartening. And then followed up two really bad games. Again, with two really good games, beating the Celtics without LeBron or AD, which if you listen to my last episode, I gave the Lakers zero chance of winning that game. And then went on with a somewhat healthy roster, at least with AD and LeBron, to beat the Knicks in a nice hard-fought game in New York and Madison Square Garden. And then finish up the road trip in Charlotte with a nice win against the Hornets. A game that got a little too close for comfort, but overall the Lakers looked good in that game. And they come back 4-2, you know, and this is just about as good, if not better, than most Lakers fans, myself included, expected from the Lakers on this road trip. Looking at the road trip, you know, realistically, you would have expected the Lakers to beat the Hornets, the Hawks, and the Rockets, maybe lose to the Celtics and to the Knicks. I guess the Warriors game also is part of that road trip, which I kind of forgot about. So maybe, you know, that game, Lakers should have won that game as well, right? Like, so you expect to win against the Warriors, the Rockets, the Hawks, maybe losses against the Celtics and Knicks, and then a win against the Hornets, right? Like, that's how I would have expected the Lakers to go 4-2 on this road trip. We get a nice gutsy win against the Warriors in OT, which we talked about, or double OT, which we talked about last episode. Two bad losses to the Rockets and to the Hawks, which we talked about last episode as well. And then, you know, in my last episode, I'm talking about the Celtics and the Lakers taking on the Celtics. I was recording that podcast episode a few hours before game time against the Celtics, and I gave the Lakers zero chance of winning that game because news had come out that LeBron and AD weren't playing. And, you know, after two bad losses, even with LeBron in one of those, with LeBron and AD in one of those, it was just kind of like, yeah, there's no way that we're beating the Celtics, right? The Celtics are like the record-wise, at least, the best team in the NBA right now. Lakers came out firing on all cylinders. Austin Reeves went off, shot 70% from three, seven for 10 for 32 points. D'Angelo Russell had a great game. In general, the team couldn't miss. Torian Prince was hitting his shots. Max Christie was hitting shots. Looking at the box score, right, we had, you know, every single starter scored in double figures, including Rui Hachimura off the bench. So we had six guys scoring in double figures. Reeves leading the team with 32. D'Lo had 16. Jackson Hayes had a huge game with 16 points, 10 rebounds. Jared Vanderbilt had 10 points, and he left before halftime with a foot injury, which we'll talk a little bit about that. Torian Prince had 11 points. And then Rui Hachimura, 15 points off the bench. Christian Wood added 4 points. Max Christie had 9. So almost had seven guys with double figures against the Celtics, and shot 52% from three, 40% from the field. We just couldn't miss. And, you know, a lot of that was, you know, Austin Reeves going 7 for 10 from three. D'Lo went 4 for 8 from three. Jared Vanderbilt went 2 for 3 from three. Rui Hachimura went 3 for 6, right? So just an overall great shooting night from the Lakers. And the thing with this game was there was just a ton of intensity and energy coming from the Lakers' side of the court, right? Like, we were flying around on defense, tipping the ball, getting steals, causing turnovers. And going into this game, you could tell the Celtics really underestimated the Lakers, especially knowing that LeBron and Anthony Davis were not going to be playing in that game. they did not think that this was going to be a hard game at all, right? Like, the hardest players that you're playing against are Austin Reaves and D'Angelo Russell, who are, they're, you know, they're good players. I'm not to throw any shade at them or anything like that, but in terms of winning a game, right, you're not really that scared that Austin Reaves or D'Lo is going to really take over a game and force you guys to lose. In this case, it was a total team effort, right? Reaves led with 32 points. He was really outstanding. But overall, it was a team effort, as can be seen by a very even spread, right? Outside of the 32 from Austin Reaves, you had three guys with 15 or 16. You had two guys, and then three guys with 9, 10, and 11. So overall, really even split from a scoring standpoint. So that was awesome to see. You know, we were able to hold Jason Tatum to only 23 points. He had 23, held Porzingis to 17. I was a little nervous about Porzingis going into the game. I didn't even really, you know, do much of a preview of the game just because I assumed that we were going to get blown out. But, you know, going into the game, a guy like Porzingis, who's like 7 foot and can shoot from the outside, can take the ball inside, you know, he can be a matchup nightmare, especially for the Lakers not having Anthony Davis. But we were able to keep him contained enough, right? He only went 1 for 7 from three. 17 points, you know, in this game, we were flying around, contesting threes, staying in front of guys, where in the past on defense, and I talked a lot about defense in the last episode, but we're leaving guys wide open from three. Even if the defense is decent, we're not rushing to get out and close out or to switch and get out to guys who are wide open from three, and we're just kind of hoping that they'll miss the shot or something. And in this case, there, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it felt like there was a lot of contested threes, a lot of contested shots, staying in front of Jason Tatum, staying in front of Kristaps Porzingis. You know, Jaylen Brown only had 8 points in this game. And so overall, the Lakers played really well, you know. And this, I tweeted this out the night of the game. Like, this goes to show what playing defense and putting out significant effort does, right? And on the Laker Film Room podcast, if you guys listen to that podcast, you know, Mike Trudell, who's Lakers sideline reporter, was kind of saying, like, you know, you can't really get this from a team every single night, this level of effort, right? And it over an 82-game season, which makes sense, right? Like, you know, you can't just go out and play like this is your last game every single night. Obviously, you have certain players on your team who play that way. You know, think about a Dennis Rodman or a Ron Artest or a Jared Vanderbilt type player where they might not add a ton offensively. They're going to add a lot on the boards defensively and just overall energy and effort and hustle plays, all that kind of stuff. You know, you have specific players who might do that every single night or close to every single night, but collectively as a team, you're not going to be able to put out the effort like as if it's the finals every single night. But the Lakers did that against the Celtics, and it was great to see. It was great to see that the guys didn't just roll over knowing that they're undermanned without their two best players in LeBron and Anthony Davis, and really took it to the Celtics. You know, the Lakers were leading the majority of the game, and the Celtics would go in and they would make some runs. They'd bring the lead down to like 6 points, and you'd think, well, here it is. This was fun. This was fun while it lasted, but here come the Celtics. They're going to take the game over and go from there. But they never did, really. You know, every time the Celtics got within 6 or 7, the Lakers went down to hit a three to extend their lead back to 9 or 10. And Lakers ended up winning the game 114 to 105. And just an overall great team win that none of us really expected. So that was an awesome way to start the weekend on Thursday night last week. And then going from there, the Lakers played on Saturday night in New York against the Knicks. The LeBron and Anthony Davis were back for that game. And, you know, there was a lot of people with the Celtics game talking about, like, LeBron and Anthony Davis sitting against the Celtics as, like, a message to the coaching staff or to the front office or whatever, just a message to whoever wants to listen. You know, a silent protest that they're not going to play because Darvin Ham's an awful coach or whatever, you know, whatever their reason is. And maybe that's true. Who's to say, right? Like, you're playing your number one rival over the course of history, right? Like a huge rival. You only play in Boston once. It's a big game. And you decide to sit out and they're not necessarily, I mean, to be fair, like I didn't expect LeBron to even play against the Hawks. Because that was the second night of a back-to-back, I believe. Anthony Davis was definitely dealing with some sort of triggered injury with like his groin area or hip flexor kind of area. So in some senses, I wasn't expecting them both to play in some of these games right there, along that time, right? So like maybe it was just injuries and they just decided like, you know, better to just rest up for the next game. But regardless, they didn't play. Lakers won, and it was great. You know, I don't know. You know, LeBron tweeted out like the time's up emoji, and there's been these cryptic messages, and you know, I talked about this last time, but you know, you had Anthony Davis responding to questions saying like that's up to the coach regarding lineup changes. You know, maybe that's what the protest was about. Maybe it was protesting the lineup changes. But the funny thing is, you know, reporter like Mike Trudell and stuff were saying like it was likely that going into the Celtics game, the starting lineup was actually going to be changed to the Western Conference Finals. You know, the lineup that got us to the Western Conference Finals with Jared Vanderbilt inserted in there in place of Taurean Prince. But then Anthony Davis and LeBron James sit out, and so we don't see that. And then Jared Vanderbilt gets hurt in the Boston game, which thankfully reports have come out that it's like a foot sprain, like in some part of the middle part of his foot, that he's going to be reevaluated in 3 to 4 weeks. So who knows, you know, 3 to 4 weeks until he's reevaluated, which could be he's making progress and he can come back next week, or it could be this isn't healing up the way we think it should and he needs to, you know, 2 more months, or who knows, right? Like there's no real definitive timeline for the Jared Vanderbilt injury, other than it is, I guess, good news that they didn't just outright say like he's shut down for the rest of the season kind of thing. So we'll see what happens with the Jared Vanderbilt injury. But ironically, he gets hurt in the Celtics game. So then going into the Knicks game, Jared Vanderbilt was not able to start. However, Darvin Ham, instead of just throwing Taurean Prince back in the starting lineup, put Rui Hachimura in the lineup. So that was an interesting little mix up with the starting lineup there. In the game, Taurean Prince still ended up getting 33 minutes versus Rui got 19 minutes in that game. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt, I guess. But the Lakers get the win in New York, 113-105. A nice, like I mentioned, hard-fought win in New York against a team. You know, the Knicks, like, Julius Randle's hurt right now. So they do have some injuries going on. But they've been beating teams. You know, they're 32-18. They've been beating teams. They're still a good team, a good solid team. So to go into New York, into Madison Square Garden, and get a win, and you know, LeBron James led the team with 24 points. Austin Reeves put up 22 points. This was a down game for Anthony Davis. He only had 12 points. He did have 18 rebounds, 5 assists. So he was still contributing, but from an offensive standpoint, it was a down game from a scoring output for Anthony Davis in that sense. So to, you know, you don't have Jared Vanderbilt, one of your best defensive players, who's also been playing decent offensively. Anthony Davis has a down game offensively, and we're still able to go in and put up, you know, 113 and beat the Knicks, right? And so a lot of this has to do with the Lakers' defensive effort again, right? Surprise, surprise. The Lakers held the Knicks to 19 points in the fourth quarter, outscoring them 33-19. After, you know, it was, what was the score at halftime? It was, doing some mental math right here, 59-59. It was a tie game at halftime. And then the Lakers came out and got outscored 27-21 in the third quarter. So they're down by 6 going into the fourth quarter. And, went on and just, you know, they held the Knicks scoreless for like a stretch of like 6 minutes straight, 7 minutes, something like that. So the defense really stepped up. Can't talk. They really stepped up, and you know, they couldn't stop Jalen Brunson. They couldn't do anything to stop Jalen Brunson on the defensive end. And so they ended up just like doubling him every time they got the ball in the fourth quarter. Jalen Brunson had, what did he have? 36 in the game. So he had a really good game overall. But in the fourth quarter, the Lakers really did whatever they could to stifle him and double team him and all that stuff. You know, the mindset at that point was like, anyone else on this team can beat us except for Jalen Brunson, right? Like we will let Dante DiVincenzo go out and beat us, or Josh Hart, or you know, Precious Achiuwa, right? Like they'll let those guys beat them, but they'll do whatever they can to keep Brunson from being the one to beat him. And it worked. You know, we held the Knicks to 105 points, put up 113, got a nice win in New York. Two games that most of us, myself included, would not have expected the Lakers to win. So that was a nice little change of pace in terms of like beating some good teams. And actually, we've beaten some good teams. We beat the Clippers. We've beaten some good teams this season. So it's not like this is like, oh, we're finally beating good teams. Like, we have beat good teams this season. We just haven't been consistent. You know, we've been losing to bad teams, coming up and either beating or been in close games against the good teams. So going into the Hornets game, right, it felt kind of like a trap game a little bit in terms of like you go out and put out a ton of effort against Boston and New York. You get those wins. You go to Charlotte, last game of the road trip. It could be easy to potentially relax a little bit, take it for granted, right? The Hornets are not a very good team this season. LaMelo Ball's hurt. It could be a cakewalk of a game, you know, and those are the games that you get caught in, right? That's kind of what happened to us against, I feel like, Houston and Atlanta a little bit at the beginning of this road trip. So we go go into Charlotte, and that game definitely could have been dangerous, you know, could have been a trap game. But we go in, and for the most part, of the majority of that game, the Lakers held like a 15 to 20 point lead for the majority of that game. And then going into the fourth quarter, Lakers kind of start to relax a little bit. There's a possession in the fourth quarter, maybe like halfway through the fourth quarter, not a possession, but a stretch of possessions like around halfway through the fourth quarter, maybe, where the Lakers went 0-for-5, I think, from three, where LeBron was just kind of like jacking up threes. I think D'Lo took one early in the shot clock. There, you know, there's a stretch where like we're just settling for threes because, you know, the team, understandably, right, like you, in the same way where you can't put out like high level energy every single game like we did in Boston, it can be hard to do that for the majority of a game, right? That's why like teams will go out to like a 20 point lead, but then by the time the fourth quarter comes around, it ends up being like a 10 point game, and it's kind of like, oh, this game might be in question. You know, that happens with the Lakers a decent amount. It happens with every team. You know, it's hard to keep your foot on the throttle for so long, but you know, the Lakers start to kind of, you know, we start missing some shots. We're getting a little lackadaisical. Brandon Miller, is that his name? Where's this game? Well, Miles Bridges went off for like 41 points. Brandon Miller went off for 33 points, you know? So that was where most of the scoring came from for the Hornets, was Miles Bridges and Brandon Miller. 41 and 33 points, and they couldn't miss towards the end of the game, right? Like, they were going down and they're like hitting a bunch of shots and like putting up a bunch of points. Lakers down the stretch started missing shots. Like, in this game, we actually only shot 23% from three. We went 8-for-34 from three in a game where like we kind of started off pretty hot. D'Lo had 28 points, LeBron had 26 points, AD had a triple double, 26 points, 15 rebounds, 11 assists. Austin Reeves only had 9 points. He went 0-for-5 from three. Had 11 assists, though. So both him and AD with 11 assists in this game. But yeah, 23% from three. Like, that's hard. I mean, we shot well from the field overall, 56% from the field. But 23% from three is rough on 34 shots. Versus the Hornets had a decent shooting night, 49% from three, 40% from three, 49% from the field. And again, like I said, two big performances from Miller and Bridges. So it's funny because like the Lakers actually were doing their job. The offense was, you know, firing on all cylinders for the majority of the game. And then come the fourth quarter, Lakers start getting a little lazy, a little lackadaisical, feel like they have the game in the bag, and the Hornets keep coming. They got the game down. You know, I mean, Lakers end up winning 124-118. So they won by six. I think they got within four, at least a couple times, you know. So like the game was within reach with a minute or two to go for the Hornets. Thankfully, they couldn't, there's a few threes where they couldn't convert and get it done. So Lakers come out with the win in a game that they should have won, in a game that they played well. So they should have won that game still, even though they ended the game pretty bad. But I still think they're the better team in general, and they were playing like the better team. So they just ended up kind of almost fumbling the game, but they got through it. So we end up going 4-2. Our four wins coming against the Warriors, the Celtics, the Knicks, and the Hornets, and then losing to the Hawks and the Rockets. You know, looking back at this road trip, right, like the way that we played against the Celtics and the Knicks. It's like, we could have gone undefeated on this road trip. But at the end of the day, like, it is a road trip. It's hard to go in and have a, you know, stellar performances night in and night out when you're on the road like that. And you know, maybe the Celtics performance and the Knicks performance couldn't have happened had we put more energy into the Rockets and Hawks games from a defensive standpoint. You know, maybe I'm being too generous. Who knows? Like, I don't know. The NBA is weird, right? Like, we talk about this, like, energy and effort and stuff, and I have no idea what it's like to play 82 games in an NBA season. You know, I can talk about it all I want, but I don't really know what it's like. That being said, I would imagine that, you know, a road trip where you have back-to-back games, you have, you know, three games in 4 days or whatever the situation is, I would imagine it's tough to put out, you know, the type of energy we saw in New York and Boston every night of the road trip. So in theory, yes, we could have gone out and gone 6-0 on this road trip, but we didn't. But we beat two good teams. We go 4-2 and we come back to LA, two games above 500, still in the ninth spot in the West. Like we've talked about, the West is a little funky, where like the 1-4 seeds are really, really close. 5-10 kind of spaced out, but you know, in the last 30 or so games that we have of the season, you never know what could happen, right? Like, you could have guys get hurt, you can have teams go on losing streaks, teams go on winning streaks, etc. So, you know, looking at the standings, Lakers are sitting in, like I said, the ninth seed, 27-25, a game below Dallas, who's 27-23. So we're tied on the win column, but two games back on the loss column. We're three games back from New Orleans in the seventh seed, and then also three games back from Phoenix in the sixth seed. Phoenix and New Orleans are tied currently, record-wise, but I guess Phoenix has the tiebreaker, so they're in the sixth seed. The fifth seed, we are 4.5 games back on. 3.5 games back on. So, you know, I mean, 3.5 games isn't crazy. I feel like once you get 4 and up, that can get a little tough, you know. Like, thinking about how you would make up that headspace, right? You need four losses in a row versus four wins in a row. That's tough in the NBA, you know. I mean, over the course of 30 games, if Sacramento loses 4 more games and the Lakers win 4 more games, maybe, you know, and looking at the schedule, or not the schedule, but like looking at these teams, doesn't show. I want to see, like, how many games we have left against, like, the Kings, for instance, you know, where we can actually, like, make substantial headway, you know. So, okay, so we play them in March in Los Angeles. Let's see. Okay, so we have two more games against the Kings. So, right, like, if we're 3.5 games back, right, if we handle just those two games and all else stays equal, that gets us close. That's something, you know. So, like, so there is still some opportunity to, like, have those, like, head-to-head matchups where we make some headway, but at this point, yeah, sitting in the ninth seed, a few games back from like the fifth place, you know, fourth place, first through fourth is basically tied. Denver and the Clippers are half a game back from first place, and Minnesota and OKC are tied for first place, basically. I mean, OKC has the tiebreaker, so they're in first place, but the 1-4 seeds are like more or less locked up between those four teams, right? Like, it'll either be OKC, Minnesota, Clippers, Denver, somewhere 1-4. It'll definitely change. It probably won't stay this way. But those teams are probably locked in either 1-4. And then, you know, 5-10, I mean, Utah's probably not getting out of the play-in. They're 25-26. We're two games above 500. It could be easy for me to say we're probably not getting out of the play-in, right? Like, around the trade deadline last season, I think I saw someone say we were 4-6 games below 500. And so the fact that we, like, made the push that we did to get, like, three games above 500 and then in the seventh seed was incredibly impressive. In this case, right, like, we're in a better position now, but obviously, like, the context matters of the rest of the teams around us and their records and stuff. You know, like, I don't know what the seventh seed was around the trade deadline last year, but I don't think they were 8 games above 500 like New Orleans is right now. I could be wrong, but they're 29-21 and they're in the seventh seed. That's pretty rough. You know, I mean, like, compared to how things were last season, I feel like things were a little bit closer. And I'm just going off memory and stuff and my assumptions, but so I could be wrong. But the context of what's going on around the league matters for sure. And then right outside the play-in, you have Houston, who's 23-26. Golden State's 22-25. So they could also make a run for the 10th or 9th spot in the play-in tournament, probably, but they probably aren't jumping up to the 7th seed, maybe the 8th seed, if they close out the season really, really well. But so in some ways, some things are locked in place a little bit, right? Like, I don't think the Lakers can get above the 5th seed. But there is a world where we could make a push for the 5th seed. So all that being said, you know, it's Tuesday. The trade deadline's on Thursday. And there's been a lot of talk about what the Lakers are going to do. I've talked about it a lot. Obviously, there's been a lot of rumors going on. Will the Lakers trade for DeJounte Murray? Will they be able to? Will the Hawks take what the Lakers want to offer? Should the Lakers go after a stretch big kind of guy that can play alongside Anthony Davis? Should they go after a, you know, three, like, wing, you know, type guy, like a small forward wing type player? Or should they go for a kind of like defensive guard that can help perimeter defense and things like that? And the Lakers are in a really interesting situation where they are playing really well right now, actually. We've had some ups and downs. You know, if you would have asked me last week where the Lakers at, I'd be like, oh yeah, it sucks because we just lost to the Rockets and the Hawks. But at this point, we are sitting, you know, two games above 500, just got off a tough road trip where we ended up 4-2 on the road trip. And we're going into the trade deadline in a spot where, like, you know, like the main trade pieces, right? You think about the main trade pieces for the Lakers at this point are D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, maybe Austin Reeves. I've seen reports that the Lakers are saying Reeves is untouchable, but I think if the right deal came around, they might trade Reeves. You know, I've seen like Jalen Hood-Schifino in some trade talks as he's a rookie this season who has a $3 million contract right now. And then obviously we have a 2029 first that we could use in these trades. So there's been a few names floating around. You know, it's been DeJounte Murray had been the main one for a while, although it seems like Lakers might be having a hard time getting through to the Hawks in terms of taking the Hawks. I think the Hawks want Austin Reeves. Lakers don't want to trade Austin Reeves, so maybe they're at an impasse there. I've heard rumors about Bruce Brown. He could end up he could be a guy that the Lakers take a look at. You know, at the very least, I think the answer for the Lakers, and you know, I don't know, there's names that have been thrown around, and there's guy I can comment on guys, right? Like, I didn't like the Lakers, the idea of the Lakers trading for Zach LaVine. Not that that's happening anymore because he's getting season-ending surgery, but I didn't like the idea of the Lakers trading for Zach LaVine, but I do more so like the idea of the Lakers trading for DeJounte Murray. Maybe there's someone else out there that we're not even talking about that could be on the Lakers radar. You know, Bruce Brown is another guy. I'm trying to think who else. There's like Royce O'Neal. I think that's someone on Brooklyn, some guys on Brooklyn, PJ Washington off of Charlotte. I've heard people mention his name. You know, there's plenty of guys whose names have gone around. You know, people have mentioned Lauri Markkanen off Utah. That one would be crazy. I like that trade, but I don't think the Jazz would go for that one. You know, because Lauri Markkanen, he's young. He's still pretty young. He's 7 foot tall. He can space the floor. He can shoot. And his contract's only $16 or $17 million. You know, he's not up in that even $20 million range, which is crazy. So, definitely a very tradable contract, which is intriguing. But overall, speaking generally, right, it's I would, with the Jared Vanderbilt injury specifically, I mean, it's tough. We have holes everywhere defensively, you know. We have holes at the guard position defensively with Gabe Vincent's injury situation, right? He had surgery, but he might be able to come back sometime in March, in a month or so. You know, now we have this Jared Vanderbilt injury who, you know, Jared Vanderbilt's a Swiss Army knife to a certain degree where he can guard point guards, but he can also guard wing players as well. So we're missing out on him. So is someone like Bruce Brown a guy to go and get who I feel like could kind of fill the Jared Vanderbilt role a little bit from a defensive standpoint. Do you go and get, like I mentioned, someone like Lauri Markkanen, you know, just throwing a name out there, right, who's like a stretch big in a way, who can space the floor, he can provide some defense, but he's more of a big, right? Or do you just hold on to the team, like maybe just make like a small move, bring back someone like Dennis Schroeder, not, you know, it doesn't have to be Dennis Schroeder, but someone like that where it's like, you know, the move, it doesn't really move the needle that much. You probably don't have to trade a pick for someone like Schroeder, I would imagine. I'd be surprised if you had to trade at least a first. Maybe you just trade some second round picks or something. Bring in someone like Dennis Schroeder doesn't necessarily move the needle a ton, but he does provide energy and defense, and he can also provide a little bit of playmaking as well, like we saw last season, you know. Right, do we go that route where it's like we kind of hold on to our picks and we hold on to our guys and, you know, and we move in, we just see what we can do, you know. Jury's still out on whether or not the Lakers are actually contenders or not. You know, we go out and we beat the Celtics without LeBron and AD. Is that just like a one-off instance, or can the Lakers actually piece some things together and, you know, make some sort of run with this team that we have? D'Angelo Russell is playing well as a guy who has been on the trade block pretty much all season. You know, he's going out and he's, you know, just playing loose, having fun, it looks like, putting up some good points, right? Overall, been a little inconsistent, but had a really great January. Has started overall the February off pretty well as well. So, you know, maybe you just roll with it, see where you can piece things together defensively. You know, maybe this team can step up and play defense better than they have during the season, just because it's the regular season, as they focus and as the season comes to an end a little bit, and they prepare for being in the playoffs or being in the play-in tournament or whatever. You know, so maybe we don't make a huge move. Maybe we don't trade D'Angelo Russell for DeJounte Murray or that kind of deal, and we just kind of roll with the team. In one sense, I don't hate that idea. You know, I'm torn, right, where it's like the Lakers need to get better defensively regardless, whether it's the guys they have just stepping up and playing better defense or going out and getting someone that's a little bit more of a defensive specialist, maybe like a Bruce Brown type player. But at the end of the day, I do think that there's enough talent on this team that we could make a run again. You know, now are we going to go and get past Denver or Boston? I don't know. You know, I don't, maybe not. It depends. You know, I think we go out and we get swept by Denver last season. Three of the four games were close games. D'Angelo Russell was nowhere to be found for the majority of that series. Anthony Davis had some good games. LeBron James wasn't fully healthy with his foot injury. You know, there's a lot of excuses that can be made from a Lakers standpoint, which, like, I don't want to do, right? I'll take the sweep like a man. It is what it is. Denver was the better team, and they won the finals because they were the better team. But there were a lot of things going against the Lakers from a not even like from a ref standpoint or anything like that. I'm just talking like internally with the team itself. LeBron injury, D'Angelo Russell not fitting within whatever was going on, or not being able to handle the pressure or whatever, you know. And at a certain point, like, you kind of are who you are, right? Maybe that is just who D'Angelo Russell is. Maybe he's an 82-game player, but he's not a playoff guy. And maybe you need him. Maybe he's better off as like a backup guard who can come in and provide some three-point shooting and some playmaking, but doesn't have to have the burden of being the point guard for a championship team, right? And maybe you need someone like Kyrie or something, and then D'Lo takes less money and he's a backup point guard. You know, maybe that's D'Lo's situation. But also, you know, this was, as far as I know, this was D'Lo's first Western Conference Finals appearance. I could be wrong. I mean, I'll have to go look that up. But, like, you know, you also live and learn. You know, maybe D'Lo learned from that playoff experience, and maybe he can go out and in a, you know, in his next playoff appearance, he can go and play a little better. To be fair, like, we don't get to the Western Conference Finals without D'Angelo Russell, right? Like, big shots against Memphis, some good games against Golden State, and overall, he just was outmatched against Denver. You know, it's a tough matchup. This is a tough matchup across the board, right? Like, I thought I liked that matchup going into the series, right? Which I've been called out on Twitter a few times, but, you know, I thought I liked that matchup against Denver. But I didn't think about the guard play enough. You know, like, Jamal Murray just destroyed the Lakers. He destroyed D'Angelo Russell to the point where D'Angelo Russell wasn't even playable because defensively he couldn't hang. Austin Reeves struggled. I thought I liked the Jokic Davis matchup, and maybe I was just thinking too much about their previous matchup in 2020. But, you know, that one was Anthony Davis had a hard time holding his own against Jokic just with how big Jokic is and all that stuff. So overall, it's a tough matchup across the board. But that being said, you know, maybe D'Angelo Russell, maybe there's something to be learned from that experience, and maybe he can go out and be a good player for the Lakers if the Lakers are able to make another playoff run this season. So all that being said is, like, there's a world where the Lakers don't need to make any huge trades, and they could maybe just kind of try and keep the momentum that they have from this road trip and go on and make a playoff run. You know, I think they have the talent and stuff. It's just a matter of the effort. And then also, you know, both, I mean, I talk a lot about defense, but offensively too, you know, you look at like two complete ends of the spectrum, even just in the Charlotte game. If you didn't watch the Charlotte game, just go back and watch it. If you did watch it, you know, you'll know what I'm talking about. But like for the majority of that game, the Lakers were moving, you know, offensively, they're moving the ball well, they're passing, they're cutting, they're setting screens, they're setting off-ball screens, they're getting open shots, and they're hitting them. You know, it's a momentum thing a lot of times, right? Like you're just in the flow, you hit a few shots, you hit some more shots. You know, LeBron gets downhill, he gets some layups, you get Anthony Davis some lobs, right? Like there's just a lot going on. There was a lot going on offensively for the Lakers against Charlotte, and they're doing the same against New York, they're doing the same against Boston. You know, you get those, you're moving, you're flowing offensively, but then you look on the flip side, the fourth quarter against Charlotte, where the Lakers stopped moving, they either got tired or were just, you know, thought they had the game in the bag, right, and were just giving less energy, right? They stopped moving offensively, they started settling for more threes, because you're more stagnant, you're just not, I don't know, basketball is a flow, it's a flowy game, right? Like you're in a flow, you're getting momentum off of movement and all that stuff. If you're just standing around, you get past a ball and jack up a three, I don't know, your percentage of making that shot is probably not very good unless you're someone like Steph Curry or Ray Allen or whatever, right? Like you coming off of a screen, coming off of, you know, even if you're just dribbling the ball and you know, make a move, step backs, things like that, it's like there's just something about the flow and stuff. And I'm sure as an NBA player as well, you know, you kind of start to feel that as well, where it's like if you're stagnant and you're not moving around a ton, you're not being productive offensively even without the ball, it can be really hard to get into a rhythm, you know. And so I feel like the Lakers have gotten into a rhythm generally speaking for the last few games, and it's been good to see offensively and then defensively as well, right? Like I talk about this all the time, like defense, good defense leads to good offense. If you're getting stops, if you're forcing turnovers, it's leading to fast breaks, which lead to easy buckets, high percentage shots, all that stuff. You have the other team on their heels, they're going to foul you more. Like there's just a long list of things that cultivates from good defense and from an offensive standpoint, even, right? Not even just stopping the other team from scoring, but helping yourself to score more as well. So a lot of good stuff from the Lakers on this road trip, a lot of bad stuff, but you know, it was nice at least to end the road trip on a nice little 3-game win streak. And in a decent spot. You know, it's tough. Like, you know, maybe this is just, you know, I keep going back and forth with the D'Lo and DeJounte Murray situation, right? Like, I tweeted this out. I think I replied to a tweet on this. But I was saying, like, you bring in DeJounte, let's say with the Lakers trade D'Lo for DeJounte Murray, throw in a pick or whatever. DeJounte Murray comes in. You're going to lose some shooting, right? Especially with how D'Lo's been shooting lately. You know, DeJounte Murray's not going to come in and shoot as high of a clip as D'Lo has been. But you are going to gain more defensively. You know, if DeJounte Murray comes in and is locked in, plays tough defense and all that stuff, and plays like a defense that he's capable of playing, you will get some playmaking from him, right? Like, you might not get three-point shooting from him as much, like as high of a percentage of three-point shooting, but you'll get... He can attack the basket and different things. Like, you'll get offensive playmaking. So I think, like, you look, and this is why I've been pro trading for him at the end of the day, is I feel like offensively it's a bit of a wash, right? Like, you can still get playmaking from him, albeit maybe not three-point shooting as much, but, like, you still get offensive playmaking from him and you get better defense. So, like, offensively, I view it as a wash a little bit. Both D'Lo and Murray can put up 20 plus points in a game. They can be playmakers, all that stuff. But what Murray can bring to the table defensively seems like it's something that either D'Lo can't bring to the table or just doesn't bring to the table. You know, I don't know which it is, but at a certain point, you kind of just, again, you are who you are and you just do and don't do certain things. So that's why at the end of the day, I've been pro trading for Murray if it means sending D'Angelo Russell. And it's tough. Like, I like D'Lo. D'Lo feels like a guy that belongs on the Lakers. He seems like he loves being a Laker. It's fun seeing him and his friendship with Austin Reeves and all that stuff. Like, I genuinely like D'Lo on the Lakers and all that stuff. But is he the guy? Can he be the starting point guard on a finals contending or finals winning team? And I don't know. I'm not fully convinced. I mean, like, you would think on a team with Anthony Davis and LeBron James, the answer would be yes. But after what we saw last season, you know, there are some doubts for sure. You know, there's plenty of, for as many people that like D'Angelo Russell on the Lakers, there's a lot of people that don't like him. And I go back and forth. You know, there's certain things. He's a high risk, high reward player. You know, against Boston, this was against Boston, right? Against Boston, you know, the Celtics were making a run, this was against Golden State. Wow, I'm getting all these games mixed up. Maybe I already talked about this. I think it was against Golden State, where like it was a close game. D'Angelo Russell comes down and shoots a three early in the shot clock. And it's one of those shots where it's like, no, 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 what are you doing? And then he hits it and you're like, oh, hell yeah, let's go. It's one of those kind of shots. And that's the kind of situation you get with D'Angelo Russell. Same thing happened last night against Charlotte, where the Hornets are making their little comeback. The Lakers are kind of on their heels. Lakers have just shot and missed like four threes in a row. And the Lakers, I think they shot a three, got an offensive rebound, kick it out to D'Lo. There's like, you know, the shot clock resets to like 14 when you get an offensive rebound. So there's probably like 13 seconds on the shot, 12 seconds on the shot clock or something. And he just gets it and he's open. So he takes the three and then he misses it. And it's like, you know, you could take a little more time off. You could get a better looking shot. But also at the same time, like if D'Lo's open, shoot it. You know, like he shoots at a good enough level, especially, and he's been hot enough lately where it's like, if he's open for three, I'm happy with him taking the shot. So in that sense, it's tough, right? There's a little bit of an IQ thing there where it's like, do you try and get a better looking shot to like a higher percentage shot, potentially like get LeBron cutting to the basket or something. But also at the same time, if he had made that shot, it would be like, oh, you know, that's what he does, right? Like he hits open threes and it helps us when we're, you know, on our heels a little bit. You know, he did the same thing against Memphis in the playoffs, like I mentioned, right? He hit like two or three threes in a row that took a game where we were, I think, down by a few to up like six or something. You know, like he's a high risk, high reward player from an offensive standpoint. And then he's a little bit of a liability defensively. So it's tough. You know, like he's one of those guys that like he can help you a ton or he can hurt you a ton on any given night. And, you know, thankfully lately he's been helping the team a lot more lately than hurting the team. But come playoffs, will that change? You know, like kind of did last season, and it would suck for that to happen again. And then, you know, his I think he has an opt out, or is he an expiring contract where like he could walk at the end of this season? So like it would suck to like not trade him. Like Murray's contract is, I think he has like 3 years left on his contract, so at least Murray's contract is nice in that sense. Whereas like if he's a good player and he helps the Lakers, we have him for two more seasons or whatever it is at least before he needs to be re-signed and stuff. So at the end of the day, like if I had to land somewhere, I would say trade for DeJounte Murray if you can make it happen, right? If the Hawks are open to it without Reeves or Hachimura being included or whatever, if you can make it happen for D'Lo and like a pick or whatever it is, then go for it. That being said, who knows? It could very well not happen. And if it doesn't happen, if we have D'Lo at the end of the trade deadline, if more or less the team is intact now as to how it was before the trade deadline, then I think we have enough talent to hone in, play some good basketball, and make a run. But at the end of the day, you know, we do need to get better defensively again, whether it's making a trade and bringing in someone that can fill the holes that Gabe Vincent and Jared Vanderbilt and Cam Reddish have left with them being hurt currently. Or do we just kind of wait it out, hope they get healthy soon and just roll with what we got? You know, I could see it going either way, and I wouldn't be tremendously upset either way. So I feel like I'm in a good spot as a fan. At the end of the day, I've kind of come to terms with the fact that, like, we probably aren't winning a championship this season. And if we do, like, incredible, right? But, like, I've kind of come to terms, like, this is not a championship season for the Lakers. But maybe we can, you know, make a run to some degree and have some playoff success and whatnot. I haven't even talked about this at all, but coming up on Thursday, the Lakers play the Nuggets at home. It is Kobe's statue unveiling. The Lakers announced today that they're bringing back the Black Mamba jerseys for that game against Denver. And I tweeted this out. I think the last time the Lakers wore their Black Mamba unis against Denver was the game in the Western Conference Finals when Anthony Davis hit the game winner in game two for the Lakers to go up 2-0 back in 2020 in the bubble. So hopefully we get some good juju from those unis against Denver on Thursday. Otherwise, still going to be a tough game. You know, Denver, like I mentioned, they're, I think, in the fourth seed right now, but they're very much in the hunt to get back up to the one seed this season. I think Murray had an injury for a little while and stuff, but overall, they're still a really good team and pretty much the same team that they had last season outside of, like, Bruce Brown and some guys. But, like, they're a good team. You know, we saw them game one of the season and got blown out, but should be a fun game, hopefully. You know, hopefully the Lakers can come out with some energy and play well at home. Hopefully between the Mamba unis and the Kobe statue unveiling and all this good stuff happens. But also at the same time, trade deadline's Thursday. So if the Lakers go out and make some trades on Thursday before the game, we could be coming out and playing with a skeleton of a team. You know, I don't think that we're going to be making a ton of moves like we did last season in that sense where we don't have a ton of guys. But, you know, we could be without D'Lo, or we could be without Reeves or Hachimura or whatever, right? Like, we could be without some guys that get some decent playing time. And obviously you wouldn't have the guy that you just traded for because that just doesn't happen. So in that sense, like, the Lakers could be undermanned on this game on Thursday, which is a little bit of a bummer. This happened last season. We played the Bucks on the day of the trade deadline, and it was like, all right, well, this is now a scheduled loss. And the Lakers actually played well in that game and almost I think we, like, almost won it. It was, like, a pretty close game point, like, at the end of the day. Like, we were playing really well. I think Austin Reeves crossed up Giannis. So it was pretty fun. So, like, overall, that's a little bit of a bummer. So, we won't be trading. I don't think we'll be trading a ton of guys like we did last season where we, you know, were waiting for, like, D'Lo and Jared Vanderbilt and all those guys to come in. You know, we were just kind of like a little bit of a shell of a team against the Bucks. So hopefully that's not the case on Thursday against Denver. It's possible, but I don't think so. But we might be without, you know, someone like D'Lo or someone like Austin Reeves or someone like Rui Hachimura. It's one of those points in the season where we are just patiently waiting and anticipating what's going to happen. You know, it's only Tuesday today, so we still have all day tomorrow and most of the day Thursday to find out what's going to happen. The statue unveiling is taking place at 3 p.m. outside of Crypto. It is not open to the public. So if you're listening to this and you're, like, you know, hearing about it and you didn't know that it wasn't open to the public, use this as a warning to not show up because they're not going to let you in, or, you know, I don't even know if you'll be able to see anything. You're better off if you have Spectrum Sportsnet, the channel, then they're televising it there. So at 3 p.m., you're better off just watching it from the comfort of your home. So Kobe statue unveiling. You know, I've been thinking about what the pose will be for this Kobe statue. I have a hard time believing it'll be anything but, like, the patent Kobe fadeaway, but, you know, maybe it would be cool if it was, there's, like, one picture of him, I think it was after the Lakers beat the Celtics, where he's, like, jumping in the air and he's pumping his fist. That would be a cool one. There's the one that gets shared a lot where I think it was also after the 2010 championship against the Celtics where he's, like, on the scorer's table with his arms fully out from the back. It says, you know, Bryant 24. That'd be cool. You know, I've been watching on Spectrum Sportsnet, like, the backstage Lakers stuff, and they're showing, like, background of, like, the different statue unveilings with, like, Shaq and Elgin Baylor and all that stuff. And so it's fun to see, like, how much thought goes into what pose they do and stuff. Like, the Shaq one's super unique where he's, like, dunking the basketball in the statue and he's, like, hanging off the building, I think. So it'd be fun to see, like, something like that with Kobe where it's, like, an action shot where it's him, you know, like I said, like, the fadeaway or, like, jumping and celebrating a championship win or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Overall, it's fun, you know. Yeah, there's always a weird mix with the Kobe stuff now where it's a celebration of you know, his time as a Laker and all those good memories and stuff, and then also this sense of mourning him as well, and you know, his passing and stuff. So overall, though, it'll be fun to see the Lakers in the Black Mamba uniforms again, and taking on one of the best teams in the league, and hopefully going out and ending up with a victory. So I might try and do another episode on Thursday, maybe Friday. Well, Friday might be tough. I don't know. I want to try and do another episode closer to the trade deadline, depending on what happens. You know, if nothing really happens and things are quiet, then maybe I'll stay put and just keep it to once a week. But if some things happen on Thursday, maybe I'll try and do an emergency pod if the Lakers make some moves before the game on Thursday. So we'll see what happens. It's been fun. Thank you all for listening, and go Lakers. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Lakers Carpool. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts and share it on social media with your friends. You can find the podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or most places where you listen to podcasts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and go Lakers.
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won!